Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The book considered to be the definitive work about Michael Jackson's fall from grace, Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case, just became even more explosive. Award-winning investigative journalist Diane Diamond first reported on the child sex crime allegations against Jackson back in 1993. Now she offers startling new revelations about the final years of Jackson's life as she adds four new bonus chapters full of her trademark in-depth reporting to her original blockbuster work. A well-connected and fearless investigative reporter known for her ability to communicate complicated stories in an understandable, common-sense way, an impressive career, former news anchor on NPR's All Things Considered, Capitol Hill correspondent, you've seen her on all the major networks, senior investigative reporter for Hard Copy, where she first reported on child molestation charges against Michael Jackson, Court TV once again breaking the story of another allegation of child sexual misconduct against the entertainer, author of Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case, now with four all-new bonus chapters, also an updated audiobook. Multiple award-winning journalist, author, syndicated columnist Diane Diamond is back with us on This Week in America. Diane, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the program.
Wow, what an introduction, Rick. Thank you so much.
And I always feel like I'm leaving a couple of decades out of there. You've done so much. Sometimes we'll do like a two-hour program, and I can do justice with everything that you've done. You're back.
I'll send you my long resume, and then you could just read that,
okay,
you know?
We could do that. There is so much there. It's so impressive. In fact, you go through that. It's like, okay, well, this is important. This is important. All of a sudden, you got three pages of everything that you've done. Back now, much national acclaim with the book, the four additional chapters, revealing exclusive new information. Let's start. You talked with, for the first time, one of the unindicted co-conspirators in the 2005 case. Who is Vinnie Amen, and what is his connection to Michael Jackson?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the new revelations I have in these new chapters. Vincent Amen was back in 2003 when the second round of allegations against Jackson came forward. A kid named Gavin Arvizo claimed he had been sexually molested. Vincent Amen worked for Michael Jackson. There was a group of people who got together to try to revitalize Jackson's career. And Vincent Amen, oh gosh, he was 21, 22 years old, very smart, a business major. He was convinced to come out to California from his home in New Jersey and work with Team Jackson. He was right in the middle of this project to revitalize Jackson's career when this second round of allegations hit. And as such, he, being sort of the low man on the totem pole, was tasked with doing a whole lot of things that were mentioned in the indictment against Jackson. It was a big conspiracy indictment. You know, you sexually molested a child, and then you got your underlings, the people who worked for you, to try to kidnap that family, to try to send them to Brazil. You checked the kids out of school, because the accuser had a brother and sister. You got them visas, you got them passports, and you were ready to ship these people out of the country. So it turns out it was Vincent Amen who did most of those chores, going to the passport office,
yes,
with the family, checking the kids out of school. So I got to know Vincent Amen, and he wanted to, frankly, unburden himself. And I tell his side of the story, what was going on, the panic within Team Jackson as these latest, then in 2003, the allegations rolled out.
It's so fascinating. He even tried to sabotage Gavin's medical records. I mean, they really were doing everything they could to make this go away. When you talked with him, you've got some great insight as to what was going on, the level of panic, just when they think maybe things are back and Jackson's career could take off again. Comes the second round of accusations. What was it like inside Team Jackson?
Well, according to Vincent Amen, there were three or four levels of people over him. A couple of Germans, a man named Frederick Mark Schaffel, who had been a gay pornography filmmaker, and a young man named Frank Cassio. Now, Frank Cassio had gone to high school with Vincent Amen back in New Jersey, and he's the one who convinced Vinny to come out to California and work on this project. he described to me a very systematic program, if you will, to alienate the Arvizo family, to keep them away from the media, to keep them away from police, frankly,
yes,
and to get them out of the country. And startlingly, he says the person at the very top, of course, was Michael Jackson, but he had hired Mark Garagus, the attorney.
Yes.
And Vincent explains these meetings that they all went into with Garagus, where this plan was hatched to literally kidnap the family, and how it was directed, according to Vincent Aumann, by attorney Garagus.
Now, this is interesting. There is so much, and I don't want to use the word startling too frequently during the course of our conversation today, but boy, that's the one that keeps coming to mind. With us on the program, Diane Diamond, author of the book, Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case. The book is available at Amazon. As I mentioned, 4 new chapters. Look for the updated audio version at audible.com. If it's not there, it will be within a couple of days. Let's go back to what was going on behind the scenes. Who was actually calling the shots? Was it Garagus, you're saying?
Apparently, yes. According to Vincent Aumann, he had a plan. He knew what legally could hurt Jackson the most, and set in motion this idea that, okay, this is a poor family. There's no father in the picture, just the mother. They live in East L.A. Go take everything out of their apartment, close up their apartment, and put everything in storage. And then we got to get them visas and passports and get them out of the country. And who's going to do all this? And they all looked at Vinny, and they said, Vinny, you go do it. And he did it. Now, I feel that this kid has great remorse. I call him a kid. He's a grown man now with 2 young sons of his own. But there's a level of remorse, I guess. That is the best word. And he backs up everything, Rick, with documents and receipts and contemporaneous notes that he kept. Again, this was a very intelligent kid. And I said to him at one point, you know, they made you the scapegoat. And he said, oh, I realize that. I realize that now. Everybody hatched this big plan, and then I was the one who did the dirty work. So this was it was an inside look at how the operation operated, and it was a real eye-opener for me.
He also brought you an inside look inside the jury room. This is amazing. He shares something with you that he actually bought on eBay. Talk about that. You had an actual notebook from one of the jurors, so we're sort of in the jury room, in the courtroom, in their minds as they're going through the process of the trial.
Exactly. And not just one juror notebook, it was 6.
Oh, 6.
This one particular juror, I remember him, he was an alternate, and jurors are supposed to turn in their notebooks
at
the end of the trial.
Yes.
But they forgot to ask the alternates for their notebooks. So years passed, and this man put his notebooks up on eBay, and Vincent Aumann saw them there, and he said, I'm going to buy them. And I think he paid, I don't know, $1,500. I can't remember. It's in the chapter, but didn't pay much money. He got the 6 notebooks. He got the court-issued pens that the man used. He got his juror badge. And he got the certificate signed by Judge Melville. You know, thank you for your jury service,
yes,
blah, blah, blah. So that was another inside look, a real eye-opener into what at least this juror was thinking as the state's case against Michael Jackson was laid out. And I write about that detail. I quote his notebooks pretty extensively in one of my new chapters.
Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case by Diane Diamond, with 4 new chapters. We're talking about some of the highlights of those 4 chapters. The book is available at Amazon. She also is the narrator for the updated audio version. You'll find that at audible.com. That should be there within several days if it's not there by now. Let's go back and talk about the jury, because it's interesting what some of the jurors really felt Michael Jackson did molest children.
You know, it was one of the most, let's use that word again, startling
yes,
things that I discovered. There are 4 jurors who today say, you know, I think he did molest children. But in the jury room, they declare, the jury foreman was misinformed in pressuring them to vote not guilty. And by that I mean they are quoted as saying that this jury foreman said to everyone in the room and during deliberations, look, you cannot convict somebody just on testimony alone. You have to have a smoking gun. You have to have an eyewitness. You have to have some medical documentation to back it up, you know, some injury to the child. Well, that is nonsense. There, you know, child molesters, I could go on and on about pedophiles' behaviors. They don't do what they do in front of witnesses. They're very careful not to physically injure a child. And I don't want to get too graphic, but if it is a oral attack, there's no medical evidence. But this jury foreman apparently day after day after day kept insisting, I don't care what you think, you have to prove it with some smoking gun. And there isn't one. So they all voted not guilty.
It's interesting because we all think, what if Michael Jackson had been found guilty? Jermaine, his brother, had thought about that. And again, a startling revelation, what he was planning in the event that he was found guilty.
Well, get this. Jermaine Jackson later tells a reporter, well, you know, if my brother had been found guilty, I was prepared. I had a private jet at a nearby airstrip, and we were going to swoosh him away onto the jet and take him to a foreign country. If America didn't want him, then we wouldn't want him in America. Again, that is complete Jackson family spin nonsense. If Michael Jackson had been found guilty, the bailiff would have stepped forward, put his hands behind his back, handcuffed him, and marched him out of the room. They would have taken his costume and his wig and given him a prison garb and a number and put him in a cell. Jermaine would have been nowhere near his brother. But you see, it makes for a good Jackson family story.
That story and many, many more in Diane's book, Be Careful Who You Love Inside the Michael Jackson Case. Updated for startling, revealing new chapters in the book, the audio updated version as well, which Diane narrated. I'll give you more information on that here in a couple of minutes. Let's talk about what happened afterwards. This wandering all around the world, Michael, where did he go and what was life like for him during that period?
Yeah, you know, he really became a global nomad with his three children and the nanny, Grace. Her name is Grace Raumba. It was a sad time, and I tried to recount it in as much detail as I possibly could, because you'd think the man was found not guilty. You'd think he would show the world, he would get back into the music business and make fabulous music again and show his children what a real showman was like on stage. But he didn't do any of that. He, of course, needed a rest after that arduous trial. So he went to Bahrain and was the guest. In other words, everything was paid for by the Sheikh. The Sheikh had a production company and believed that Jackson had come there to record new music and they were going to do great videos and have a great business. Well, none of that ever happened. And then when his welcome ran out with the Sheikh actually sued Jackson to recover some of the money that he had given him. Jackson went to Ireland, stayed in a couple of places. One had a great production studio. Other talent came in to record with Jackson. But nothing ever happened. And, you know, as I was researching this, I realized the depth of his drug addiction just took a chokehold on Michael Jackson. He never recovered. It just got worse and worse. And according to Grace Raumba, there were times when he was absolutely anorexic, not eating, only drinking, only doing drugs. And she really feared for the safety of his children. And the children, by the way, love Grace. That was like their mother figure. So after Ireland, he then finds his way back to Las Vegas, where another sheikh puts him up in a big fancy villa they called the Thriller Villa. And there he had a Will.i.am, for example, came. They're going to record music. It was going to be great. But nothing ever happened. And so then, of course, as we all know, the AEG people, the big music production company, came knocking on the door, and they decided, he decided, all right, I'm going to pick myself up. I'm going to go do this last tour. He called it the This Is It tour. And he went back to Los Angeles, to the Beverly Hills area, where AEG put him up in a big, beautiful mansion with his children and Grace. But nothing ever happened, because as we know, that is where he died, with a needle in his arm with propofol. So it was a tragic tale, and dotted with a lot of interesting detail that actually I dedicate one whole chapter to that.
The book we're talking about is Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case. Diane Diamond, award-winning investigative reporter, our guest on the program. So much more to talk about. We're going to take a break now. We'll come back and talk about much more, including that half-hearted attempt to get his career going with a manager named twice the same name. We'll talk about that after we come back on This Week in America, back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, Diane Diamond with us on the program, author of the book Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case. Book now available, of course, at Amazon. 4 new chapters. Look for the updated audio version at audible.com. That'll be there in the coming days if it's not there now. When we left, we were talking about this attempt to get back in the record music game when he came back to the United States in 2007. His manager was Dr. Tomei. Now, how serious was this when you've got a manager named Dr. Tomei?
Yeah, and you can't really figure out who he is or where he came from. And
yes,
he tells all sorts of stories about how famous and wealthy and connected he is, but nobody ever seems to really know what he's talking about. This was a man who declared himself Michael Jackson's manager. He was introduced to Michael by his brother, Jermaine. Jermaine always sort of hung around on the periphery, I think, because he frankly had nothing else to do. His career was over.
Yes.
But Tomei, in the end, according to several people, just scared the daylights out of Michael Jackson. Tomei made all these plans. He got the AEG people interested. They got this Is It tour getting going, and everything was chugging along just fine, except Michael Jackson was still doing drugs to a horrifying degree. And while he did show up for rehearsals and he did show moments of brilliance, it just was not to be. And Tomei, among a group of other people, pushed Jackson to the point where Jackson became completely paranoid and afraid, physically afraid of Tomei. You know, I look back at his career, and as you know, I've been covering Michael Jackson since 1993.
Yes.
Boy, that's how old I am. But there never seemed to be a time where he surrounded himself with really competent, professional, forward-thinking people. He had some good lawyers, but he'd fire them, and then he'd rehire them. And, you know, but the managers, the people closest to him, were frankly, they all had another agenda, and that was to make money off Michael Jackson. They were yes men to his face and their hand out to everybody else who wanted to deal with Jackson. You want to talk to Michael Jackson? It'll cost you so much money. Put it in my hand. So his judgment for employees to be around him was never very great, and that didn't change up until the very end with Dr. Tomei.
That's just amazing. Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case by Diane Diamond. 4 new revealing chapters, as we're talking about on the program today. A few minutes left in the show. I want to talk about the HBO documentary, Leaving Neverland. What were your thoughts on that? People coming forward and saying, well, these two guys that you had talked to before, Wade Robson and James Safechuck, where were these people over the years? They were in it for the money. You understand what goes on behind the scenes. Why, in your mind, did it take so long for them to come forward with their stories?
Because that's the way it works.
Yes.
With victims of a pedophile. Yeah, you know, look at the Catholic Church pedophile scandal.
Yes.
Some of those accusers, it's taken 10, 20, 30 years for them to come forward, especially if they're male. Young boys who are sexually molested frequently do not tell that terrible secret. But it, you know, something about their manhood and looking weak or being a sissy, and they just do not tell. you're right. I wrote about Jimmy Safechuck and Wade Robson in the book when it first came out in 2005. I reported on them when I was on hard copy in 1993. I knew that these two young boys had spent an inordinate amount of time with Jackson, often without their parents, and I had a sneaking suspicion. And when I watched that Finding Neverland documentary, I wasn't surprised at what they were saying about the years and years of abuse they allege at Jackson's hand, but I was so saddened by it. I just, I got weepy, I'll be honest with you, because 1993, these kids, we knew they were, Jackson, what he called his special friends, but nobody ever stepped in and said, hey, especially the media. The media, who lapped up every bit of spin about buying the elephant man bones or sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber, oh, nobody stopped to say, why are you always traveling around the world with unaccompanied young people?
Yes.
Why are they all dressed just like you? This doesn't seem right. Are you related to him? Nobody ever asked these questions of Michael Jackson. And I believe he was one of the most prolific pedophiles we've ever known. And he did it right under everyone's nose.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Nobody stopped to say anything until Wade Robson and Jimmy Safechuck looked into a camera and told their story. And now people are not asking me, oh, gosh, do you think Michael Jackson did it? Now they're saying, gee, I wish I'd listened to you way back then.
And the media would have paid more attention, and you address that in the book, Be Careful Who You Love, inside the Michael Jackson case. Complicit comes to mind as you're reading through some of the information you have. A minute or so left in the program. Yeah. 10 years since his death, fans and critics are grappling in conflicted feelings about the late superstar. What are your thoughts as you look back 10 years and, well, headlined in USA Today, Jackson's legacy veers from genius to pariah. How do you view his legacy?
As a complicated one.
Yes, yes.
You know, he was a tremendously talented person. He had a terrible childhood. His father pushed him, abused him, beat him into submission. But he was a flawed man. Yes, he was a genius. He could sing and he could dance and he could do all sorts of fabulous things. But I believe he also molested young boys. And I think his legacy will have to include the words genius and pedophile in the same sentence. It doesn't mean, I don't think we should stop listening to his music. I like his music. You can't erase.
Is that difficult? I was just going to ask you, if you're driving along and Billie Jean comes on the radio, because I know I'm like, okay, do I change the channel? Do I listen to it because I did like his music? You sort of have this moral dilemma as you're listening to the radio. Do I hit the button or do I listen to the song?
Well, I listen to the song, and I think that's his greatest contribution to the world.
Yes.
Are the songs and the videos, and look at history. Look at all the wonderful contributions we've gotten from technology to inventions to music from flawed people. Are we going to just erase all of them and all their contributions? That denies us their talent. So the whole idea of trying to ban his music, I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think we need to look at him with an open mind.
You know, it's interesting.
And realize there's a raft of victims he left behind.
Yes. So startling. I'll put a complicated next to that as well, because it's really so difficult to sort out. The book is Be Careful Who You Love, Inside the Michael Jackson Case by Diane Diamond. As we've mentioned, four new chapters, revealing chapters that are in the new book. The audiobook, updated audio version, which Diane narrated, available at audible.com. If it's not there, it will be in the coming days. Diane, it is always a pleasure to have you in the program. Thank you for taking so much time to be with us for the entire program today. Thank you for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, Rick, I love being on your show. We'll talk again soon.
Would love to. Thank you. You're listening to
Thank
This
you.
Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.